Hi, this is Bernard Fowler, and you're listening to Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook. If WUSB isn't on your radio, then your radio isn't really on.
Well, that was brand new from Bernard Fowler's brand new release, Inside Out. That was Dancing with Mr. D, Rolling Stones classic. And before that, we heard Tie You Up. And we started off that set with a classic from Mr. Fowler and a previous incarnation of his work with Tackhead, which is one of my favorite records. And that was Tell Me the Hurt. So we covered a lot of ground there with Bernard. And we are lucky enough right now to have Bernard Fowler on the line with us, all the way from L.A., I believe. Bernard, welcome to WUSB Stony Brook.
Finn, what's happening, brother? Hello, WUSB.
Hey, man. I got to tell you, the new record is super cool. I didn't know what to expect when I heard it was coming out. And I hear the thing, and I'm like, amazed. Let's talk a little, before we get into any background, the impetus. How did this record come about? Where did the idea come from?
Well, yeah. Finn, when I was finishing up my last solo record, The Boor, like I do whenever I finish, when I'm close to ending a project, I start thinking about what I'm going to do next. And, and as I'm finishing The Boor, I started thinking about, of course I want to, and I feel like I have to do another solo record, but I didn't want the next project to be, anything like the last two solo records. I was looking to do something really different. So, I had a few ideas, and one of which was, to do a spoken word record. And, I just kept thinking about it, and things happened, and it just started, I had to get it started somehow. And, I think I've told this story to a few people, but, I was on the road with the Stones during the No Filter tour, and I was on stage practicing my conga, and, Chuck Lavelle yelled out a song that we would do during the sound check. And I'm playing my conga, and I just started reciting the words, and all the band were on stage, and they heard me doing this, and they all turned around and looked at me, and they all started smiling. And it just became a thing that I do before sound check. And they seem to, enjoy listening to me doing this. So, I said to Mick, when the tour is over, I'm going to cut this spoken word thing. And he said, Bernard, I've heard Rolling Stones songs a lot of different ways. He said, but I've never heard anything like that.
And that is cool that the band dug it. That was so great.
Yeah, it was cool. And, that was basic. I mean, he basically gave me a green light.
That's great. That is so cool. And, of course, as we barely have mentioned, because I wanted to concentrate on your work here, but you do have a little side job with the Rolling Stones, and that you've been doing for a while. Very generous of you to do that for them. and that's been something else. And we'll talk a little about that shortly. But so this is these are all Rolling Stone songs, and
yes.
and you've taken them as you've done this spoken word thing and assembled this music behind it that has this great vibe of guys like Gil Scott-Heron and this whole thing, the spoken word over the top, and it's an amazing vibe, Bernard. You've just done a great job.
I appreciate that, Finn. It was a true labor of love.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. You've done a great job. So now let's go back in time just a little bit, and we'll come back to the album. But let's go back in time a little bit. I think I first became aware of you like with in the Tackhead period, you know, and the Philip Glass stuff and stuff like that. Those albums I originally got. And you've worked with an amazing amount of people, as I've discussed on the show just earlier tonight. Everyone from Philip Glass, Paul Simon. One of my favorite bits of yours was always the Material album that you did, which is Laswell and Company. Great, great work in there. And of course, Blood Ulmer, one of my heroes. And you did a great job with him. And Public Image. And you've done countless things. And how did you, because originally, you know, you're a singer, right? And you're a songwriter and you're doing your stuff. How did this whole world of singing with all these other people open up for you? Did you seek that out, or did it just kind of like happen? Did it fall together? What happened?
Well, I always loved to sing. I always loved to sing. And, you know, when I was, you know, young and my mom used to make me take a nap, she would always put a radio station on. It wasn't any radio station in particular. A lot of times it was different radio stations. So I fell asleep listening to a lot of different kind of music. And like I said, I always loved singing. And, you know, my dad, you know, when we used to go to family outings, my dad would, you know, he used to get a kick out of seeing me do the James Brown. So at these family outings, he'd say, come on, Bernard. Come on and, you know, do that James Brown for me. And he would, you know, give me some money to do it because I was a really shy kid. And, you know, so it kind of started there. And, you know, as I was growing up, I was heavily into sports. I played b-ball morning, noon, and night. I was also in school. I was in, you know, the glee club, the chorus. I was in band, you know. My first instrument was upright bass, and my first gig was a salsa gig. I played in a salsa gig.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it was very cool. It was with a guy by the name of Freddie Crespo, a great piano player from the neighborhood. And then after that, I played trombone. And the first band that I was in, I played trombone and I sang. And how I got to that first band, okay, like I said, I played a lot of ball. And when I got in high school, you know, I played varsity basketball. I was a pretty decent player. And there was a guy on the team who's older than I was, and I don't think he liked me too much. So he told the coach, you know, that, you know, Bernard's not serious. You know, after practice, he goes and sings with the band. So one morning, like 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, you had to get to school like 6:30 to have b-ball practice before, you know, classes started. So after this one practice, the coach asked me to come into his office, and he says, "I understand that when you leave practice in the afternoon, you go and sing with a band." And I was like, "Oh yeah, you should come and see us play." And he was like, "Well, no, I don't think so." And he said, "Fowler, you're either going to play basketball or you're going to be in the band, but you're not going to do both."
Oh no.
Yeah. And I was stunned.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Wait, why? You know, I never miss practice. You know, I'm always at practice." "Well, that's just the way it is. You're going to play ball or you're going to be in the band." And I remember standing there crying. He's pushed me against the wall. And I remember I said, you know, I'm standing there looking at him, and I said, "I can't believe this." I said, "You're serious?" He said, "Yeah, I'm very serious." And I looked at him and I told him, I don't know if I can say this on the air.
Well,
but I told him, "F you."
Right.
I told him, "F you, I quit." And I never played basketball again after that.
That's too bad that somebody, and you know, just briefly, you know, we are, I am right now while I'm talking to you, because we're pre-recording this, about three blocks north of Queensbridge houses on 12th Street.
No way.
That's where I live, my friend, and that's where you grew up.
No way.
Way.
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
I know.
My neighborhood.
I know. So we're in the hood right now. So
yes,
Queensbridge
cool.
houses, wow. by the way, still great. Kids playing basketball still everywhere. The park,
mm-hmm.
the park across the street on the river there, still a beautiful
yeah.
thing. Lots of kids doing all these things. It's such a shame that you happen to have somebody in your life there that with all the things you were doing, with the complete kid that you were, doing all these things,
yeah.
kind of cut a little part of it off. And that's you know.
Yeah,
cool.
he did. You know, I like I said, as a kid, I was into a lot of things. You know, I was playing ball. I was studying martial arts. And the guys on the team didn't know it, but I was, you know, I would sneak to Queens Plaza and go and take ballet.
Oh, see that? Look at that. You were doing everything.
It was a ballet school. Yeah, I was doing a little everything, you know, as kids should.
That's right. Exactly right. And they shouldn't be pressured by fellow kids or especially adults to not do those things.
Right. So, you know, when I was forced to quit, you know, I continued to sing with the band, and I did all, you know, through high school, you know, and I went to Queens College because the guys in the band, they were all older than I was, and they used to take me to jazz workshops so I could get better on my trombone. And, you know, leaving Queens College when they, you know, I was so broke. I had no money. And, you know, I was just at a kind of crossroads. And I remember getting on the train, going home and, you know, talking to myself. And I decided that I would give music, I would give it a shot. Hmm. And so I left school. I left Queens College in my second year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, started auditioning for bands, you know, but I had no intention of joining just to get that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that band, you know, I eventually, you know, I left that band and I joined a former drummer of that band and we formed the New York City Peach Boys.
Right.
And that was pretty much the start of my music career.
Yeah, and the only good thing, I think, in retrospect about the basketball thing is that eventually, you know, at a fairly young age, our knees go. Whereas your voice only gets stronger.
Right.
Whereas your voice only gets stronger.
Right, that's right.
That's right. And you and I are the same age, too. So, yes, I'm very familiar with that those results. So we're talking right here with Bernard Fowler, essential member of the Rolling Stones, but much more importantly right now, talking about his career and his life and his brand new record, Inside Out, which is really a kick record. And right now we're going to I think, another cut from the album. I think we're going to hear Undercover from the Night. So we'll be back in 1 minute with Bernard Fowler. Now, Bernard, I have to tell you that Undercover of the Night right there from Inside Out is amazing. It's really a great tune. Let's talk a little about the band you assembled, well, the players you assembled for this record and that process, because you've got some amazing, amazing players on this album.
Yeah, thank you. Well, before I tell you about the players, let me tell you a quick story about Undercover of the Night.
Yeah.
When I decided to do the spoken word project, that song was one that was at the top of the list.
Mm.
And the the beginning of the song, you hear the woman speaking in Spanish. I wrote out a dialogue. I wrote out this dialogue to put at the beginning of the song, and I needed a Hispanic woman to read this dialogue I wrote in English. I needed her to read it in Spanish. So I called a good friend of mine that I'm sure you're probably familiar with, Carmine Rojas, bass player, played a long time with David Bowie and Rod Stewart, amongst others. So I called Carmine. Carmine's from New York, Carmine Rojas. And I said, Carmine, I need a girl to come to the studio and read this dialogue. He said, sure. He said, what can you tell me? I said, she has to be from Nicaragua. So he calls back 5 minutes later. He said, I got her. He said, she's on the way to the studio. I'll meet you there. So the girl comes in. Now, she's not an actress. She's not a singer. She'd never been in a recording studio in her life. And she comes with her son. And I give her the paper, and she reads it, and, you know, she seemed a bit apprehensive. And I was like, well, you know, what's wrong? And she says, Bernard, I grew up in Nicaragua during the war.
Right. Wow.
Which was, you know, it was a shock. And she said, you know, I'm worried about it favoring one side or the other. And I told her, I said, no, it could be someone from either side. So she went in and she started to read this dialogue. And as she's doing it, she's starting to cry.
Oh, man.
And the hair, every time I tell the story, the hair on my arm stands up.
Oh, man.
And it was maybe one, two takes at the most, and she nailed it.
Wow.
And that's what you hear. And you hear her. Her name is Raquel Morales. And so you hear her talking, and then you hear the soldier in the background in Spanish. He's saying, I think I see someone. There's someone over there. Go get her. Go get her. That's Carmine Rojas.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Okay, so as to your question.
That's a really cool story. And I have to tell you, the original Stones version of that still sits my hair on end, too. So, It's got a lot of power, and you bring even more to it.
Right on. So again, like the guys, I was really lucky to be able to get all the guys that I did to play on this record. Because, as you know, everybody's doing something. Everybody's mm-hmm. doing something. Everybody's got different gigs to do. So, let's see. On drums, I have. Steve Jordan,
mm-hmm.
Vince Wilburn Jr. On bass is Daryl Jones from the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
On guitar, there is a guy by the name of George Evans, and also Ray Parker Jr.
That's right. And what a player, man. What a player.
Yes. What a player. So Ray Parker Jr. and... on piano, I have Michael Bearden. Michael Bearden's playing piano. You might be familiar with him. He was the musical director of the tour that Michael Jackson was preparing to do before he died.
Mm.
And also on piano is Mike Garson, you know, David Bowie's piano player 40 years.
Yep.
And... we have, let's see, on the horns, we have a cat by the name of Ron Duglia, and we have Tim Reese, who's part of the Rolling Stones band,
mm-hmm.
and Keon Harold. Keon Harold did all the trumpet work. That wasn't Miles Davis. He did all the trumpet work on the Don Cheadle Miles Davis movie.
Okay.
And let's see. On percussion, there's a guy by the name of Josh Egan. There's Manyungo Jackson. Walfredo Reyes Jr. And Lenny Castro.
Mm.
And myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... I think I got everybody.
Well, I got to tell you, first of all, Steve Jordan's playing always knocks me over. So he's got a certain sound, a certain attack that always amazes me. And of course, Keith has utilized him and in bands, and he's just a great player over the years, playing with everyone he's played with. So the this is such a percussion heavy album. You know, it's such a groove oriented record that it's to have the guys you have playing on the low end, all of them. It's just it's really amazing stuff. You put together a good team. Yeah.
You know when I formulated this whole project in my head, it was originally going to be only percussion and voice. Mm-hmm. It was only going to be that. Steve called me one day, and we were talking. He says, "Hey, man, what are you working on?" I said, "I'll send you a taste." So I sent him one track, and he calls back and he says, yo man, I got to play on that. I got to play on that track. And I said, cool. Well, when you're in town, you know, give me a call. I'll be here. And sure enough, he came in town. I think he was producing a John Mayer.
Okay.
And so he comes to the studio and he came in. Oh, I did miss someone. Clayton Cameron.
Okay.
Clayton Cameron plays brushes, snare brushes. And so he comes to the studio with Clayton Cameron. I put up the track that he heard. He played on that. And then he said, what else you got? And basically he stayed there and played on everything.
Wow. How cool, right?
Very cool.
Very cool. Very cool. We're going to hear another track right now from the album. What track do you think we should hear right now? We've already heard Tie You Up, Dancing with Mr. D, and Undercover of the Night. What track would you like to hear right now, Bernard?
It's the Morphine.
You got it, man. So right now, another cut from Inside Out right now with Bernard Fowler. We'll be back with Bernard in just a few moments. Wow, man, another great sound. Excellent choice. It was the guest choice on that one. and what a tune. You want to talk a little about making that one?
Making that track, this record, there was no budget for this record. There was no record company involved. And so, you know, I basically had to, call in a lot of favors, and I called Vince Wilburn. And I said, Vince, I want to record some stuff. He said, come on over. You know, Vince has a recording facility in his house. So we went in there. I called Vince. I called Daryl, called George. And, you know, they said, okay, so, you know, what you looking for? What's doing? So all I had to do was give them an error. And they started to play. And they played, you know, groove after groove after groove until I said, stop. That's what I'm looking for. And we started, we formulated those grooves and, you know, arranged the grooves into a kind of song format. And once we got that down, I needed some rhythm. So who is I going to call? Who are you going to call when you need some funky guitar rhythm? You're going to call Ray Parker Jr. I called him, and he said, well, Bernard, he said maybe you want to call Wawa Watson. I'm like, no, Ray, I want you to do it. So he comes over, plugs in, 1-2 takes, it's done. So I moved to the other studio, the Steakhouse recording studio, and Vince happened to be there. And I said, you know what, Vince? I'm thinking about using some Miles Davis, you know, trumpet samples, you know. And I said, that's the last thing I think I need for this track. And Vince is in charge of the Miles Davis estate. Mm. And he says, why? Why are you going to do that? He said, Keon's in town. I said, Keon's in town. Where is he at? He said, he was at the Grammys last night. Let me call him. He calls Keon. He says, Keon will be here tomorrow morning. Next day comes. Keon comes in, and I can tell Keon had a late night. I could look at him and tell. I think he might have won an award that night. And so Keon comes in, opens his trumpet case, and just walks into the room, and I said, Keon, he said, let's do it. I said, Key, you want to warm up? He said, no, let's do it. I was really surprised by that. And again, went in, 1-2 takes, and it was done. And
wow.
I think that, you know, Sister Morphine is really an outstanding track on the record.
Yeah, it really, really is. It really is. It's really it moves all around it. It's very unexpected the way it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Your preconceptions, you know, everyone has preconceptions about a song like that. You know how it's going to be. You don't expect it to move around too much. And you've moved it around quite a bit. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think I moved a lot of that stuff.
You sure did. So listen, so did have Mick or Keith or anybody heard this release yet that you know of?
Well, a few days ago, if had you asked me that question, I'd have said, I don't know. But I did a piece for Rolling Stone magazine, and I guess the interviewer asked Keith, you know, about the record, and Keith said, quote unquote, I love it.
That's great. That's great. Because how could they not? First of all, how could they not? You guys have been friends for a long time now. Let's talk a little about.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he's going to love it.
That's right. That's true. That means he may say something like, yeah, Bernard, he's a good guy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You hit it right on the head.
That's right. But that's talk about an endorsement. That's a nice thing. Let's go back just a little bit because now you are, you know, you're a member of the expanded Rolling Stones, and you've been that for a long time since 88, right? Or 87?
Yeah, it's about 30, 31 years now. I've been there off and on for about 31 years.
That is something. And let's talk a little about how you first got involved with getting involved with the Stones.
Right. Well, you know, let's see. I was touring with Herbie Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
I was touring with Herbie Hancock, and this is when Herbie had they released the album Future Shock.
Mm-hmm.
That was the album with Rocket on it.
Yep, big hit for Herbie, and you're on it, right?
Yeah. So we were on the road, and then we had a break. I had a 10-day break. And I walk into my apartment, the telephone rings, and it's Bill Laswell.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, hey, man, what are you doing? I said, I just walked in the house. He said, go to the airport. I said, go to the airport. I said, Bill, you don't understand. I just walked in the door. He said, okay, get a taxi, go back to the airport. I go back to the airport. I asked the lady, do you have a ticket for me? She said, what's your name and where are you going? I said, my name is Bernard Fowler. I said, I don't know where I'm going. So she looked it up. And she says, yes, I do have a ticket. She said, I got a first class ticket for you going to London. I said, okay, cool. I arrived in London. Bill meets me at the airport. Still don't. I know I'm there to do some music, but what and who, I don't know. So we drive through London. We pull up to this, you know, this house and neighborhood. And we walk in a room, and there's a guy on the floor with a guitar. The guy turns around, and it's Mick Jagger. And Bill says to Mick, this is Bernard Fowler, the guy I've been telling you about. And Bill leaves the room, and I'm standing there in shock. And Mick says, hey, come on down here. He invites me down on the floor, and he's strumming, and we're both humming. And the next day, and he gives me a cassette, and he says, we're going to work on this the next day. So when I went back to my room, I listened to the tape, and I did all these vocal arrangements. And then the next day in the studio, you know, Mick says, oh, I need something for this. And I said, well, listen to what I did last night. And he listened, and he said, you did this after you left me. I said, yes. He said, wow, it's really good. Let's do it. And that was my introduction to the Rolling Stones.
And that was the She's the Boss album, right?
That was She's the Boss. And right. I didn't see him for a while after that. And I met him in New York City. I ran into him in a rehearsal studio, and I ended up doing this solo tour with him. And then I was in London with Tackhead.
Mm-hmm.
I was in London with Tackhead, and I get a call. Hey, Bernard, you know, Mick Jagger's looking for you. And I'm like, well, I'm here. And well, here's the number. I called him, and he says, Bernard, I've been looking for you. I said, well, I've been here, Mick. He says, well, you know, the Stones are going to do a record. It was the first record they were doing. They hadn't recorded in like 8 or 9 years. And so I went to the studio, and we were working on some stuff. And one by one, the Stones started to come in. And I met them. I met them all. And, you know, they heard what I was working on. And Mick said, okay, Bernard, we have the ideas. Now let's record it for real now. And, you know, and I went in to do it. And I said, Mick, you know what? Stop the tape. I said, stop the tape. I said, you know, if I do all this stuff, it's going to sound like me. I said, maybe you and, you know, some of the guys might want to come in here and sing it with me. So it got quiet, and, you know, Ronnie and Keith came in, and we sang the stuff, and everybody was pleased with it. But this is a story that I like telling. As we're listening back to the stuff, you know, I could feel a little heat on the side of my neck, and I turn around, and Keith is like glaring at me. And you know, I'm trying to ignore him. You know, Keith's got those eyes, you know. And I'm trying to ignore him, but every time I look up, he's staring at me, and I said, oh, no, something, what did I do? So I said to him, I said, yo, man, I said, Keith, is something wrong? No, nothing's wrong. I'm like, well, like, why you keep staring at me? Why are you staring at me? And he says, because I thought you were one of Mick's boys. This is during a time where, you know, they weren't getting along so well.
Right.
So, and I said, Keith, I'm cool. He said, yeah, I know you're cool. I spoke to Steve Jordan. He told me about you. And we've been, you know, tight ever since.
That is cool, because during those times of tension, you always get the sense that they're sussing each other out and what have you. Yeah, that's a great story. I like that. So you felt you had some addition. Not only were you recording with the Stones, but you had some additional pressure put on you.
a lot of pressure. I don't think I can't remember the palms of my hands being so wet.
That's a great story, Bernard. We are talking to Bernard Fowler right here on WUSB Stony Brook on Finn's Revolution, and we're discussing Bernard's new release, Inside Out, as well as some of his history with Tackhead and a whole bunch of projects, and a little band called the Rolling Stones as well that he's worked with. And your story about hooking up there. So you've been with the Stones ever since, and it's just been quite a ride, right? It's been an incredible thing. Did you think it was going to last this long?
No, I never thought that it would last as long as it has, you know. I never thought that, and you know, I do know, I did know that, the Stones, over the years have changed personnel, I've changed personnel, with, the extra players. So, no, I never expected to be around as long as I have.
Yeah,
But I'm
you and Lisa.
really happy. Me and Lisa, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, now what a ride it is, right? So now you were supposed to be right about now originally on the road yourself, right, with the Stones.
That's right. Yes, we were supposed to be. I was supposed to start after I finished a Bowie celebration. I was doing the celebration tour with Mike Garson and Earl Slick.
Yep.
And as soon as that tour ended, I was supposed to go right into rehearsals with the Stones. And the day before I was to leave, I got a call, informing me about Mick's condition.
Yeah. Is there any inside word on how he's doing?
From what I hear, he's doing really, really well.
That's
He's
good.
doing really, really well. And, I think, Mick is just so healthy.
Yeah.
He's in such good shape that, I think I think that his recovery time will probably be a lot shorter than most people having the kind of procedure that he did.
Yeah, I'm sure. Plus he had a great state-of-the-art procedure as well. So that's a big plus for him. And we all wish him the best with that.
Yeah, me too.
Any possible any dates hanging out there as far as when things might get back together, or it's still a wait and see attitude?
Well, you know, like I know, I'm
I
still
got
waiting. We're
you.
all still waiting on the word. And I would imagine any day now we'll be getting a call telling us what's what.
That's good, and I wish all of them and you the best of luck with all this. Now, so during this quote unquote downtime for you, in terms of normally you'd be on the road with the Stones right now, you've released this fantastic brand new record. Are you going out on the road with this at all?
Well, my plan was while I was on the road with the Stones was to do some shows on the days off.
Ah.
So with this situation happening, it's kind of thrown me off balance a little bit, but I'm right now talking with, management and stuff about what we can do in the meantime.
Yeah, that's exciting because playing New York, I think, with this material is an essential thing. This way I can go.
Oh yeah. Well, it is a New York vibe record for sure.
It sure is. It sure is. Do you so now, are you based in LA now?
I'm between LA and New York.
Oh, okay. Because you always strike me as a New Yorker through and through, you know?
You can take the kid out of New York, but you can't take New York out of the kid.
Or Queensbridge.
Or Queensbridge. No, it's in there. It's in me through and through, man.
All right, man.
New York is home.
So how can people can obviously get this record everywhere, downloads and everything else, and
Yes.
it's an intense, really cool record, and I think you've done a great job, and I think that one of the things I think you were trying to do was and successfully is bring about the fact that the words can stand on their own very much, in these Stone songs, and that they're really, really well written, and it's not just the melody or the attitude of the song, by Jagger singing, but rather the actual material. And yeah, might you do a follow up to this or something similar again in the future, or maybe different songs even live on occasion?
I thought you might ask that, son. I actually, I have a few songs in the can that I didn't put on this record.
Okay.
So I am, I mean, the response to this record has been just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it's a great
It's been
record.
unbelievable. I'm so grateful. I'm so excited about the response, and because the response has been so, it's been this record's been so well received, I think that I have to do another one.
I think you absolutely should. And as you just said yourself earlier, you're the kind of person that's always thinking about their next project, and I knew you'd have an answer for me on that question.
I'm thinking about it. I've been doing a lot of stuff, like I said, with Mike Garson and Earl Slick and Carmine, all three that spent years with David. They spent years with David
Yeah.
Bowie, and I did think, I'm throwing, tossing that idea around in my head. Maybe I might do a David Bowie vibe next. I don't know. We'll see.
And that would also be wonderful. Mike Garson, and I'm sure you're aware, had just recently written a spectacular book about his years with Bowie too, and that's a really, really great read, and all the years he spent with Bowie. So working with him is always a cool thing too, right?
Yes, very, very cool, man. Him and
Earl.
Earl Slick and Carmine Rojas, and
Yeah.
I love being part of this Bowie celebration. And Earl Slick and myself, I guess 3 years back before David passed away, Earl Slick called me and asked me if I would sing with him and do a it was the anniversary of Station to Station album.
Oh yeah, tribute,
And
yeah.
he wanted to go and out and do that album. And I told him, yes, I'd love to. That's one of my favorite records. So
Me too.
he's he said, okay, and the tour was booked. And we're talking, back and forth about, extra material, because we were going to do the whole Station to Station record, but we were going to do some extra songs. And I said to him, I said, Earl, does David know about this? And he said, I knew you were going to ask me that. He said, yes. He said, yes, David knows about it. And he said, the first thing David asked me was who I was going to get to sing. And he said, well, I'm going to get Bernard Fowler to sing, And David said, that's a good choice. And then he says, for a minute there, Earl, I thought you were going to get some skinny white kid and do Bowie-okie.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, the truth is, you know, I'm sure you're aware that you have the vocal range and abilities to pull it off brilliantly. And I pull off the Bowie thing brilliantly. And I'm sure David was thrilled at that whole idea there. So, yeah,
Well, I will say it was a challenge. There's a reason why a lot of people don't sing David Bowie songs, because David is not easy to sing.
Oh yeah. He's all over the map too, in far as far as range, and I mean, as far as range and
Yes.
everything else he's doing, and his phrasing is yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Yeah,
That's right.
he's a one of a kind, just like Mick.
One of a.
That's right. Bernard, I want to thank you for joining us on Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook. This is going to be a podcast as of this week, and the link will be up on our website. And I will also, I'm sure Bernard will have the link up as well, because we're going to have some music, we're going to have some chatting, and some extra material on the podcast as well. And Bernard Fowler, your great new record, Inside Out, fantastic record. Congratulations on it. And hopefully you're back on the road with the Stones soon. And if not, you should really get on the road with this album as soon as humanly possible.
Right on, man. Hey, Finn, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bernard. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise, sir.
All right.
allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for many long, long years. Stole many a man's soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure that Pilate washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. I hope you guess my name.